Welcome to AIM on Air, the official podcast of the Association for Intelligent Information Management. Founded in 1944, AIM is dedicated to advancing the information management industry. We represent a vibrant global community of information leaders committed to driving exceptional business outcomes through information management fueled by technology like AI and automation. You can learn more at AIIM.org. I'm AIM President and CEO, Tori Miller-Liu, and we have a great guest today. She has more than 20 years of experience in the information management industry, working with both public and private sector organizations to deliver guidance for information management success in the digital age. She's responsible for the development of AvePoint's information management practice and products, and has led the implementation of our solutions with government agencies and commercial clients across the world. She's a member of the AIM Board of Directors and an in-demand speaker at conferences and industry events worldwide. So I am very pleased to welcome the Director of Information Management for AvePoint Incorporated, Alyssa Blackburn. Hey, Alyssa.
Hello. Is there anything more awkward than hearing your bio read?
And having to listen to it.
So, I know. Dreadful. Absolutely dreadful.
I suppose.
But I am...
In the future, we can pre-record that so you don't have to listen to it.
But when I listen to the podcast, I'll still hear it and you'll still hear me cringe.
So. Yeah, the audible cringe.
I think that sets the tone for how the rest of this podcast is going to go.
It's going to be a real cringe-worthy episode.
But okay. Of this episode, the audible cringe with Alyssa Blackburn. Oh, if I started a podcast, that's going to be its name. The audible cringe.
That or band name. Excellent. Excellent. Okay, but what is not cringeworthy, I think, is the recent report that AIM and AvePoint collaborated on. It's a report that's available, complimentary to all, and it's around AI and information management. And you and I are going to talk about some of the findings today, but just to sort of set the stage, because we do sometimes have listeners who are not as experienced as you are in this industry, why are information management and AI even in the same sentence? What's the relationship?
Yeah, interesting question, definitely. And I think my answer is, well, there is no AI without information. So even though AI stands for automated intelligence, without information, AI can't do anything. So if we think about, let's think about ChatGPT, because that's the one that most people are familiar with. Obviously, there's other tools like, you know, Copilot and, you know, there's Bing Chat, which is fueled by Copilot anyway, lots of different ones. But we'll talk about ChatGPT because that's the one most people are familiar with. What does it do? Well, it goes and essentially harvests publicly available information to produce content. So that's what generative AI is. There's lots of different types of AI. I think we're talking more in this particular conversation, we're talking more about the generative AI kind of space, which is where it reads existing content or information that is publicly available. It uses algorithms to then, I guess, come up with new ways of disseminating that information and produces that content, that new content for you. So for example, you could go and ask ChatGPT, can you write me an example of an information management policy? Now that's a great place to start, definitely. But what it will do is it will go and it will search all of its all of the content that it's been able to assess, and it will say, oh, here's some examples that I've got of information management policies that have been made publicly available. I'm going to quickly, you know, analyze all of those and then produce essentially a conglomeration of all of that publicly available information, and I'll produce something new for you. So I guess what I'm saying in this sort of realm is that without information, there is no AI. So the two are very, very tightly entwined, which brings a whole bunch of other discussion about, well, what happens if that information is not very good, or what happens if there's bias or things like that. But without it, AI can't possibly exist.
Okay, so let me ask you a somewhat inflammatory question.
I do like an inflammatory question.
Always, right?
Everyone get ready to audibly cringe.
And my podcast name will be Inflammatory Questions.
Yeah. I love it.
So I 100% agree with you. I think it's kind of undeniable. You need data information to make AI work. Do you need information managers to make AI work? Do you need information management as a practice for AI?
Well, okay. So for a start, not inflammatory. Because also, yes. Okay, I don't even need to say anything more than that. Yes.
Please. Yes. Okay. Can you elaborate? Yes. For the sake of the podcast, can you elaborate?
Next question, please. Of course you do. In fact, I would say that information management and information managers as the custodian of that kind of function of an organization are the crucial piece to AI success. And the reason for that is that we are the ones who control the management of that, the management of that information. So if generative AI is reading content, you know, because again, it can only be as good as the information that it has available to it. If it's reading stuff that is out of date, that hasn't been updated, you know, because we haven't ever implemented any lifecycle solutions, or, you know, it's just plain wrong, or we're looking at it like because, you know, drafts were started but they're never finished and things like that, we've got some really serious issues with the quality of what our AI is giving back to us. You know, that's a really serious issue when we think about, okay, well, what is this, you know, what are we generating? What's this new content that we're generating if we're generating it from content that wasn't great to begin with? And this is where I think the key area for information managers is in this whole discussion is quality and integrity. And those are two things that are absolutely essential when we're looking at how we push this stuff out. So what we need to be able to do, first of all, is ensure that the information that we're basing our generative AI on is quality to begin with. But then we also need to ensure that we can have integrity in it. So can we trace back to where it came from? Can we say this document, you know, has some generative AI content, you know, within it, things like that, so that we have auditability, so that we have reliability, so that we have efficacy, things like that in the development of our content. So let me give you an example. It's a made up example, but what happens when, I don't know, something goes before Congress or something goes before a parliament around the world and things like that. And then all of a sudden, as we make decisions based on this, you know, the information that was presented to like maybe a committee or maybe a, you know, something else. But then all of a sudden down the track, we realize, well, hang on a minute, it's not actually right. This information, maybe it did come from ChatGPT. Maybe it did come from things like that. Did it come with bias? Did it come with accurate information? Did it come from a joke website, for example? You know, were we pulling information from The Onion as opposed to like a reputable data source, things like that? And this is the component that I think information managers have a really significant role to play.
Yeah, they're that connective tissue between the output and the original source. I think it's noteworthy that not once in that explanation did you mention the word trust or trustworthiness.
I think because I use the word integrity, and to me integrity and trustworthiness are the same are the same things. I don't know that I would use the word trust. I would use the word critical analysis.
Yeah.
And I would use the words integrity, because actually, or I would use the word mistrust, because I think everything that you approach from everything that is AI generated, you should approach it with a sense of mistrust.
Yes. And I think AIM's position is that, right? When the US government was asking about the trustworthiness of AI, our position is that that is not a reasonable expectation. A reasonable expectation to set is does the data have quality? Is the output quality? Does it have integrity? Mm. Is it accurate? Is it complete?
Mm.
And mm. beyond that, trust is really subjective.
Yes,
it's hard to regulate that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what's your measurement of that? Just out of, you know, like if you're talking about trust as a as an outcome, what's your measurement? How do you measure trust?
Yeah.
Because either you do or you don't. And some people's definition of that is different. And so I don't know that that's a great way of thinking about it. And also, yeah. I really do think you have to approach everything with a sense of mistrust and a sense of critical analysis.
Yes, and which isn't to say that AI shouldn't be managed ethically. I think there is such a thing as AI, but you can have ethical AI that isn't trustworthy.
100%. Totally agree on that one. Yes.
So talking about ethical AI, are in this age of AI, information managers clearly have a role. Are they responsible for the ethics of AI? Or are they part of that conversation?
I think they're part of the conversation. I think that organizations themselves are responsible for the ethical use and implementation of AI. But how can an organization, you know, which is essentially like a corporate entity, how can they be responsible for something? So I think that we're now looking at things like, you know, governance committees and assigning responsibility and things like that. Some of the tools that organizations need to consider about that. So do they have an AI committee, you know, who can be held accountable for some of this stuff in an organization? Should an information manager be part of that? Yes, of course, without a doubt, you know, should be the chair kind of thing. But are they solely responsible? No. Do they have a role to play? Yes. So let me tell you about one of my concerns about AI, and it comes from what we see in our experience with social media. And social media is relatively unregulated, as in like it's a wild west of no regulation. But social media was one of those, you know, game-changing things that was supposed to bring us all closer together and, you know, have connections and things like that. And it's done that. It's been a really wonderful thing. But, and I can only speak to my own personal experience as a female, particularly in the tech industry, it is also a cesspool of horror. Every single time I post something just on LinkedIn, for example, and I'm a, you know, I guess somewhat prolific LinkedIn poster, but every time I post something on LinkedIn, I read it like 40 times to make sure, have I been too inflammatory? Could somebody criticize me for this? Is somebody going to talk to me? Is somebody going to send me a message about what my hair looks like or, you know, things like that? It's those kind of things that we need to worry about that, you know, maybe some people don't have to think about. Ethical AI or AI is no different. So if we roll out AI to people, so I did a presentation recently and I used AI to generate some of the images in that because I wanted fake images in the presentation. I didn't want them to be real. But if somebody was to generate an image and say, put Alyssa Blackburn's face on this supermodel's body wearing a bikini. I'm not adverse to that, by the way, if anybody wants to. But if they were to do that and then circulate that around my organization, you know, that's a massive, massive breach of ethics and trust and integrity and things like that. Can you do that with AI? Yes, of course you can. Will some people automatically do that? Yes, of course they will, because we're humans, we do dumb stuff. But what are organizations doing and what kind of governance do they have in place to set those frameworks, to ensure things like that can't happen, to ensure that people who are minorities or already, you know, dealing with things that they maybe the rest of the population don't have to, things like that. What are we doing to ensure that they are protected in the way that we haven't been able to protect people with social media, for example? What are we doing with that from an AI perspective? And that's something that I think about a lot. But you know, I don't think it's unrealistic to have an expectation that you can be safe in a workplace when we're talking about generated, you know, generated AI content. So what happens, for example, if something hasn't been secured, somebody generates AI content on, I don't know, a disciplinary policy or things like that, and a, you know, an issue that I had 10 years ago or something comes up and gets fed into that generated content. What are my rights in terms of protections and things like that for information that should never have been, you know, should never have been exposed in that way, but also, you know, it's just not appropriate to be in that kind of, to be in that kind of thing.
And I mean, when you think about from an enterprise standpoint, how you mitigate that risk, the examples you gave are great. Ideally, the organization's putting policies, structures, and security in place. So
absolutely,
your HR incident from a decade ago
is accessible
to that model.
Yeah.
But
or
nothing's infallible.
Has been destroyed because it was only needed to be retained for 5 years, for example. So it shouldn't. So this is, we're coming back to the role of the information manager in here, where information lifecycle is actually the solution. It's not just even a gray area. It's not a, oh, well, you know, but there's this and this and this and all the rest of it. It's not a gray area. It is the actual solution to a number of these things, is get rid of the content that you don't need anymore. It will save you money, but it will also make your AI implementation significantly better. It's just, it's that simple. It's somewhat frustrating. Here's the audible cringe. Are you ready? That organizations haven't cottoned onto this yet. Like, it's, dudes, it's so simple. Just put some information lifecycle in, solve all these problems. Amazing. Done.
Well, and one of my fears around AI is, one, organizations aren't ready for it in that aspect. You're right. They haven't connected information management and information lifecycle to the success of and the ethical output of these engines.
Yeah.
My fear is that that problem will be quadrupled if any legislation comes to fruition around the retention of input. So I don't know how much digging you've done on this, but Library of Congress in the US, for instance, was asking questions of the public specifically around, should AI developers be required to retain the data that they use to create that model? That's a vast amount of data, but if you're talking about how do I prove ownership and copyright for this particular piece of intellectual property, you're probably going to need to retain that data. So
but also I would say on that one though, that there's a yes, you can do that, but you can do that through the use of audit trails, or you can do that through the use of footnoting, you can do that through the use of metadata. There's a number of different ways that you can do that. Retention isn't necessarily the answer. But also, if we are cycling through our information, you know, according to defensible practices and, you know, our signed off retention policies and things like that, which have a key part to play in all of this, then that is your defensible stance kind of thing, is that this is how long we're required to keep this information for, this is the process we went through to destroy it, this is who signed it off, things like that. Maybe we use metadata, maybe we use watermarking, maybe we use footnotes, maybe we use, you know, a whole variety of things to continue that integrity, or to provide that audit trail of where did this information come from. But it doesn't necessarily have to be retention, because the more information we retain, the more out of date that information becomes, the worse our generative AI is. So I know that there's articles, like quite a few articles about, you know, ChatGPT is becoming dumber and things like that. And that's accurate. It is becoming dumber, definitely, because it's sucking more and more information in. And the more information it gets, the worse quality that information gets. So ChatGPT is not looking for quality information. It is just looking for content. It does not care that it's accurate. It doesn't care that it's maybe wildly inappropriate. It doesn't care that it hasn't been updated in 13 years. You know, it doesn't care about any of that. It's literally just looking for content. So if we translate that into our organizations, if we're actually cycling through our information in an appropriate way, then these generative AI tools can't access the stuff that is out of date, that is irrelevant, that, you know, should have been destroyed a long time ago. So therefore, it shouldn't be basing some of the generative, you know, the generated content on that.
Oh, I love that. And I really like to, if we're thinking about how do we mitigate the risk to the organization? Not only did you just clarify that it's certainly the information management aspect, but good information management practices can also reduce your liability because you have a document trail of this is why we stored this data or this is why we didn't store this data. Here's why, here's how it fits in our policy. Here's why it's compliant with any applicable legislation I love that.
Absolutely.
What other things should organizations be thinking about to mitigate their risk?
So one of the, well, and I think this really came out in the report. So to go back to the report, because I do think it's a really valuable resource and everybody should get on it. But to go back to the report, one of the things that I think was really interesting, and I've talked about this a little bit so far, but it's what I am personally referring to as the data delusion, or the information delusion, or the content delusion, or things like that. And that is the disconnect between organizations seeing something bright and shiny and in terms of what they're, you know, what AI can do for them. And it can do so many cool things. It's amazing. But also what the state of their content is. So one of the stats that I'll call out here is that 88% of organizations felt that they were ready for their information was ready for AI, they were ready, things like that. But 95% of them who moved forward with some kind of implementations faced significant challenges when it came to security, when it came to data quality, things like that. So that's a case of literally nearly 90% of people are saying, yeah, we're ready. But then 95% of them going, whoa, turns out the reality was actually quite different. So one of the things I think is that there is this really extreme disconnect between new shiny thing versus what the state of our content is or the state of our data. And one of the critical things that we as information managers can contribute here is that knowledge, is that understanding of what's the state of our data right now? Like, what are we actually, you know, is this going to be successful? Can we actually do it? Do we have these lifecycle policies in place? Do we have things in place that can watermark a document when it's got, you know, AI produced content in it or footnote it or metadata it or whatever it is? Hashtag it, for heaven's sake. My whole thing at the moment is hashtags are just metadata and we should be using them more. So if I can't convince, I mean, if you can, like, you can get a TikTok user, to hashtag, to put 400 hashtags in on something, how can we not get people in their jobs to put hashtags on things? But that's my new thing, is that hashtags just metadata. We should be using hashtags more often.
And it should be universal in all systems, because it's not.
Yes. Oh, good grief. Yeah, that's the problem. But again, we've got a generation of workers coming up behind us who hashtags are just like, my 11-year-old will say to me, like, I don't know, I'll do something at dinner or I'll drop something on the floor and things like that, and she'll just walk past and go, hashtag nailed it, like, you know. The burns I get from my children definitely fit in with our audible cringe kind of theme that we've got going today. But we've got a generation of people who are so familiar and confident with metadata.
Yeah.
Let's use that, you know, let's
meet them where they are,
what they're doing. Yeah, exactly. So yeah.
Something I found comforting about what you just explained too, around the state of data, those questions that you posed about the quality of the data, the regulations surrounding that data, those are all human judgments to make. And I have been asked fairly frequently in the last few months, do we really need taxonomy? Do we really need information management? Do we need retention policies? Because AI will just take care of that.
Could it possibly? Yeah, you know, that's a massive audible cringe from me there. And the answer is yes. Stop asking stupid questions.
Yeah.
Sorry, people who have asked those questions. No offense to you directly. Yeah, actually, and I think that they've actually never been more important, because AI is not sentient. Yes. as much as you know, developers and things like that want to play around with the tools and you know, get it to appear like it's sentient and things like that, not It's a computer. It's very, very clever, don't get me wrong, but it's not sentient. There are still things that we need to guide and that we need to control, and we need to have those frameworks in place. So those frameworks include things like, taxonomy, or life cycle management rules, or things like that. Are there ways of doing it so that it can be used, in the platforms that we're using now more effectively and things like that? Yes, of course. Should you have a six level deep taxonomy or classification scheme? No, you should not. But you shouldn't do that because it's a bad business idea. Not because you shouldn't throw away taxonomy just because one of yours is not very well adjusted, let's say. So that I still think that there's a key role for them, but we may need to think about them a little bit differently. So I'll just give you one quick example of that. And that is, okay, let's look at retention policies. How are our retention policies taking into account AI generated content? If we are managing content that has come from generative AI, do we need to increase or decrease the period of time that we would hold on to that? Is there an impact there? So in some instances, maybe there's not. In some instances, maybe there is. But actually, our retention and our life cycle management then needs to take into account, well, hang on, where did this content actually come from? And do we need to adjust that accordingly? And I would say organizations, at least in these initial phases, probably need to err on the side of caution a little bit and say that actually, if there is content that's been generated by AI, we would probably want to retain that for longer, so that if there are issues in the future, when it turns out the information it was based on was inaccurate, or we made a poor decision based on information that was generated by AI or something like that, we have the evidence there that we can trace back through that integrity layer to sort of say, okay, yes, this is where this came from. So actually, I think things like those IAM framework type of things are more important than they've ever been before. So we cannot just throw them out.
And it's probably worth clarifying for folks, when you're talking about AI output, we're not talking about, your marketing coordinator used AI to like finesse a tweet. Like we're talking about
Exactly.
you used AI to maybe generate a contract, you used AI
Yes.
to generate invoices or
Or a policy. You know, like
e-policy,
a policy framework or things like that. Or we used AI to analyze an annual report, for example, or a corporate report, and then presented that to the board to ask them to make decisions on what we should do next and things like that. Because what it all comes down to, realistically, what we're talking about when we're talking about this is we're talking about our ability to make good decisions. Every single thing that we do in our jobs is about making a decision for the people that we serve, be that through a government relationship, a commercial relationship, a not-for-profit relationship, any kind of other, service relationship, things like that. Every single thing that we do is a decision. And we have to make those decisions based on the best available information that we have. Now, if that information is being produced and is not accurate and is based on bad quality information or stuff that wasn't secured or things like that, then the ramifications of that are significant, definitely. So we have to always come back to what is it that we're actually doing? We're providing a service to people. And whatever that service might look like, that's really kind of irrelevant. And we need that service to be quality. We need that service to be appropriate. We need that service to be cost effective, things like that. So every single decision that we make goes back to what is it that I'm actually doing? Who is it that I'm actually serving?
Ultimately, it's humans serving humans, and they're just employing
Yes,
tools to do
it
that,
is.
like AI.
Exactly right. That's exactly right. Yeah. It could even be, you could even look at it in the most simplistic of terms, absolutely simplistic, which is spell check, for example. So none of us hesitate to use spell check. I've been using spell check since the mid-90s when I was, at university. For those young folk on listening to the podcast, the 90s were a time before the mobile phone, or the cell phone. It was amazing. We all wore long skirts and cardigans with Doc Martens, and we looked phenomenal. But we've all been using spell check. Now, spell check sometimes can change words and change the entire phrase of a thing, you know, like some of the, you know, damn autocorrect kind of things, you know, memes and things that we see. But spell check is just a form of automation which is a tool to make our lives easier. It doesn't mean that we can just trust it. But it's the same thing, just on a much more simplistic thing. I still have to go and check that it reads properly, that it hasn't changed crucial words from one thing to another just through the use of spell check. This is no different.
Yeah. And I think that that's kind of the crux of it. When you talk about ethical AI or ethical use of any technology, it's was human judgment and human ethics and values employed in creating this tool, in providing the data input for this tool, and evaluating the data output every single time.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And our role in that is more important than ever, because it is an incredibly powerful tool. But if it's not used appropriately or on the right information, then actually it's completely useless. So our role in this is to make sure that these incredible and powerful tools continue to be incredible and powerful.
I love that. And what a good note to end on. It's going to be our audible cringe, and that will be on our t-shirt.
I love it.
Melissa,
I love it.
Thank you so much for being on AIM on Air. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Oh, no, thank you so much for having me. I always love chatting about this stuff. So this has been really wonderful.
Thanks, Alyssa.